नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Hare Krishna. Welcome to our Bhagavata Pravaha sessions. Today we are beginning the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the next 5 days, we will cover the 24 chapters of 8th canto of Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam has 10 prominent topics. Atra Sargo Visargascha Sthanam Poshanamutayaha Manvantara Ishanukatha Nirodho Muktir Ashrayaha. Sarga is the primary creation done by the Supreme Lord. Visarga is the secondary creation done by Brahma, Manus and other Prajapatis. And Sthanam is the positioning of various living entities in different planetary systems in the universe. And Poshanam is the protection offered by the Supreme Lord to his devotees, even if some devotees accidentally do some mistakes. And fifth topic, Uti, is the inclination to perform certain activities. Sometimes that inclination is auspicious, sometimes it is inauspicious. So we have seen all these topics in the previous cantos of Bhagavatam. We have seen Sarga and Visarga predominantly in the third and fourth cantos and in the first half of fifth canto. And in the second half of fifth canto, we have seen the topic of Sthanam very prominently. And sixth canto presents Poshanam, seventh canto presents Uti, now eighth canto vividly describes the topic of Manvantara. Although all the 10 topics are present in all the 12 cantos, but still some cantos predominantly describe one topic, and that is Manvantara. In this 8th canto, we will see the topic of Manvantara. So, Sukadeva Goswami has elaborately described the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu. Swayambhu Manu was the first Manu in this day of Brahma. And Swayambhu Manu had 5 children: Akuti, Prasuti, Devahuti, 3 daughters, Uttanapada, Priyavrata, 2 sons. So the dynasties of these 5 children are very elaborately described from 3rd canto 20th chapter till 5th canto 15th chapter. And later, Daksha's episode in the 6th canto continues the further creation done through this Swayambhu Manu's descendants. So now, Swayambhu Manu's renunciation is not very much described. So, in the beginning of the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, our Parikshit Maharaj asks Sukadeva Goswami that, oh, Sukadeva Goswami, you have described the dynasties of Swayambhu Manu, and you have also described how the Supreme Lord appeared in Swayambhu Manu's dynasty. In Devahuti's dynasty, the Supreme Lord appeared as Kapila. And in Priyavrata's dynasty, the Lord appeared as Rishabhadev. In Uttanapada's dynasty also, the Supreme Lord appeared in the form of Prithu Maharaj, Shaktyavesha incarnation. And in Akuti, Prasuti's dynasties also, the Lord made his appearance as Naranarayana Rishi and also Yajna. So, in Swayambhu Manu's dynasty, the Supreme Lord appeared in various forms. Now, having heard a lot about the description of Swayambhu Manu, Parikshit Maharaj, in the beginning of the 8th canto, became very inquisitive to know the Janma and Karma, means the appearances and activities of the Supreme Lord in various other Manvantaras also. In one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manvantaras. In one day of Brahma, there are 1000 Divya Yugas. One day of Brahma is called one Kalpa, and one Kalpa constitutes of 1000 Divya Yugas. And in these 1000 Divya Yugas, there are 14 Manus. And the reign of each Manu is called Manvantara. And now, 6 Manvantaras have already completed. We are in the 7th Manvantara. And in the future, there are 7 more Manvantaras in the current day of Brahma, before the universal devastation at the end of day of Brahma. So, Swayambhu Manu was the first Manu, and his dynasty has been described by Sukadeva Goswami very elaborately. Now, Parikshit Maharaj is asking about the Lord's activities in the other Manvantaras. The remaining second Manvantara till seventh manvantara and the future seven manvantaras also, which are yet to come. When when Parikshit Maharaj asked this question in the beginning of the first, in the eighth canto, in the first chapter of the eighth canto, Sukadeva Goswami began to describe. He says that six manus have already passed, we are in the seventh manvantara, and in the future there are seven manvantaras. And we have already, Sukadeva Goswami has already described the activities of Lord Kapila, who was the son of Devahuti. Kapila had given his teachings on Sankhya Yoga to his own mother Devahuti. And there is another prominent incarnation in Swayambhu Manu's dynasty, that is Yajna. So Yajna was the son of Akuti. So in Akuti's dynasty, Lord Yajna was born. His activities are not so much described. So in this eighth canto, first chapter, Sukadeva Goswami is going to describe the activities of Lord Yajna. So Swayambhu Manu ruled for one manvantara period, and Swayambhu Manu took to renunciation and he left the family life. Along with his wife, he went into the forest to perform austerities and penances and to dedicate his entire life for the rest of his life for the devotional service of the Lord. When Swayambhu Manu went to perform austerities, Swayambhu Manu offered very wonderful prayers. Manu is the ideal human being. The word Manushya comes from the word Manu, human being. So Manu is actually setting the right standard for all human beings to follow, for the entire humanity to follow. So what did Manu do? Manu ruled with responsibility, and at the right time he retired from his responsibilities and he entered the forest to dedicate the rest of his life to practice devotional service. So everyone should follow this example. That's what Prabhupada says in his purports. So there should be one retirement where one dedicates one's rest of life for devotional service of the Lord. So Swayambhu Manu went to the forest and he started singing the unparalleled glories of the Lord. He offered prayers to the Lord. These are some Upanishadic prayers. These are standard prayers offered by Swayambhu Manu. In the ninth shloka, Swayambhu Manu offers his first prayer. He says, Yena chetayate vishvam, vishvam chetayate nayam, yojagartishaya nesmin, nayam tam veda vedasaha. Yena chetayate vishvam. Yena chetayate vishvam means the Lord has created this material world, and this whole material universe is animated because of the Lord's energy. Yena chetayate vishvam. Vishvam chetayate nayam. It is not that the law, the universe is inducing the Lord to animate. The Lord is inducing the universe to move. And yo jagarti shayanismin nayam tam veda vedasaha means when the entire universe is withdrawn into the Lord's body, the Lord is still active. The universe is not always active. Sometimes the universe is manifest, sometimes it is unmanifest. When the Supreme Lord in his form as Mahavishnu exhales, millions of universes come out from his bodily pores, and when he inhales, they again go back. Thus, the material universes are manifested sometimes, they are unmanifested sometimes. But the Lord is always existent through all phases of this material creation. Whether the material creation is in creation phase, or maintenance phase, or destruction phase, or manifest phase, or unmanifest phase, the Lord is always manifest, always active, always blissful. He is not affected by this. In the second shloka, which is the 10th shloka of this chapter, Swayambhu Manu glorifies the Lord as the supreme proprietor. He says, Atma vashyamidam vishvam yatkinchit jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bhunjita magridhakasya svidhanam. This shloka is similar to the first shloka of Isopanishad. The shloka says that everything in the entire universe belongs to the Supreme Lord, and all the living entities are His children. Just as children have a claim over father's property, similarly the living beings in this world also can enjoy the Supreme Lord, God's property, but they have to take only whatever is allocated to them as their quota. They should not encroach upon someone else's quota. So whatever we acquire by our honest efforts, that we can definitely enjoy, but we should not encroach upon someone else's property. That's what this shloka says. Because the Supreme Lord is the supreme proprietor of everything, and He gives something to us, to each of us. So we should be satisfied with whatever the Lord gives us. We should not unnecessarily become envious of someone who has more. We should not feel a sense of superiority complex over people who have less. And we should not be greedy to acquire more money by cheating other people. That's the whole essence of this shloka. And further, in the 11th shloka, Swayambhu Manu glorifies the Lord as the supreme seer and friend of all living beings. And later he says that the Supreme Lord is beyond all material designations and dualities. The living entities acquires a lot of material designations like male, female, then Indian, American, or employee, or a teacher, or a student, or there are hundreds and hundreds of designations that one person could acquire in this world, but they are all temporary, they are all material, and only materialistic living beings identify themselves with these designations, but the Supreme Lord, who is supremely spiritual, will not identify Himself with any of His designations. And He is the master of, supreme master of everything. The entire cosmos is manifested by His prowess. And further, He, Swayambhu Manu, also teaches all His descendants, all the human beings, Manushyas, are the descendants of Manu. Manu is the first created human being, and from him only all the beings manifested. So he is giving teachings to all of us. All of us are descendants of Manu. So he is teaching all of us that you should all seek the blessings of the Supreme Lord Krishna, and you avoid material bondage. In the 14th, 15th and 16th shlokas, Swayambhu Manu very vividly describes this. There is no entanglement for the Supreme Lord Krishna's devotees. And people who take shelter of Krishna will transcend all material miseries and enter the spiritual realm. And he says, conclusion is, everyone must take shelter of Krishna. So that in this way, Swayambhu Manu glorifies the Supreme Lord and offers prayers and also instructs all the human beings while he is doing his austerities in the forest. As Swayambhu Manu was absorbed in doing his austerities, some demons come and attack Swayambhu Manu. Then, as described in the 17th and 18th verses of this chapter, Lord Yajna, who was the son of Akuti, one of the daughters of Swayambhu Manu, that Yajna comes there and kills all these demons and protects Swayambhu Manu. That is the prominent activity that Yajna has done. And he also, this Yajna, the Supreme Lord Yajna, son of Akuti, also took the post of Indra in the Swayambhu Manvantara. So these are the activities of Yajna. So that's about the renunciation of Swayambhu Manu. So we have seen elaborately the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu, and in the 8th canto, 1st chapter, we have also seen the renunciation of Swayambhu Manu. So there is the description of Swayambhu Manvantara has been completed. In this Swayambhu Manvantara, there are so many beautiful incarnations of the Lord, including Varaha. So there are 6 kinds of personalities in a Manvantara. We have discussed this in the 2nd canto also, when we are discussing the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. So there is a beautiful shloka in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam that describes the 6 kinds of personalities in a Manvantara. Manvantaram Manur Deva Manu Putra Sureshwaraham Rishayo Amshavatarascha Hareha Shadvidha Muchyate. Manvantaro Manur Deva, in a Manvantara, in every Manvantara, there are 6 kinds of personalities. They are Manu, the Manu himself, Deva, the demigods, Manuputra, the sons of Manu, Sureshwaraha, the king of demigods, that is Indra, Rishayaha, there are 7 prominent sages who established Dharma, and Amshavataraha, there is a Manvantara Avatara. So these are the 6 kinds of personalities who orchestrate all the affairs of a Manvantara. So Sukadeva Goswami describes these 6 kinds of personalities for all the 14 Manvantaras in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why the prominent topic of the 8th canto is Manvantara. So, in the first Manvantara, let us see what are the 6 kinds of personalities. So, in the PPT, in the PowerPoint, you have a big table where the 6 kinds of personalities for each of the manvantaras is mentioned. So now first manvantara is Swayambhu manvantara. In Swayambhu manvantara, Manu is Swayambhuva, he is the son of Brahma, and the demigods are Yamas, created by Daksha, and Manuputras are Uttanapada and Priyavrata, and Sureshwara means Indra is Yajna. Yajna is the Supreme Lord who appeared as the son of Akuti. He only became the king of demigods, Indra. Then Rishis are Marichi and others. Amshavatara, Manvantara avataras are this Yajna and Kapila. Two Manvantara avataras are there. And the Lord's activities in the Manvantara are like Kapila gave teachings to Mother Devahuti, and also Yajna has killed the demons and protected Swayambhu Manu. So these are the six kinds of personalities in the first Manvantara. The second Manvantara is called Svarochisha Manvantara. Svarochisha is the Manu in this Manvantara, and he is the son of Agni. And in this Manvantara, the demigods are the Tushitas. And the sons of Manu are Dyumat, Sushena, Rochishmat, and others. And Indra in this Manvantara is Rochana. He is the son of Yajna. And the chief sages, the seven prominent sages are Urja, Stambha, and other people. And the Manvantara avatara is Vibhu. He is a Brahmachari. He is the son of Vedashira and Tushita. And this Vibhu has taught self-control and austerity to 88,000 sons. So we completed the description of second Manvantara. In the third Manvantara, the Manu is Uttama. He is the son of Priyavrata. When we were discussing in the fifth canto, first chapter, that Priyavrata has three sons, has many sons. Out of these many sons, three sons became the Manus of third, fourth, and fifth Manvantaras. So the same description comes here. So the third Manu is Uttama, and the devatas in the third Manvantara are Satyas and Vedashrutas and Bhadras. And the sons of Manu are Pavana, Shrinjaya, and Yajnahotra. And Indra in the third Manvantara is Satyajit. And the seven sages are Pramada and other sons of Vasishtha. And the Manvantara avatara is Satyasena, who is the son of Dharma and Sunruta. He has killed so many miscreants who were troubling the various living beings. Now we come to the fourth Manvantara. The fourth Manu is Tamasa. He is also son of Priyavrata. And the demigods are Satyakas and Haris and Viras and Vaidhritis. And sons of Manu are Prithu, Khyati, Nera, Ketu and his six sons. And Indra in this fourth Manvantara is Trishika. And the seven sages are headed by Jyoti Dharma. And the Amshavatara, or the Manvantara avatara in this fourth Manu, fourth Manvantara, is Lord Hari, who is the son of the Harini and Harimedha. And this Lord Hari, who is the Manvantara avatar of the fourth Manvantara, has protected Gajendra from a crocodile. Gajendra was the king of elephants, and the Supreme Lord Hari in the fourth Manvantara has protected Gajendra from a crocodile. Now, our Parikshit Maharaj, as soon as he heard that Gajendra has been protected by Lord Hari in the fourth Manvantara, he inquired more into this episode. So Sukadeva Goswami elaborately describes this activity of Lord Hari in fourth Manvantara. So thus the next three chapters, chapter number 2, 3 and 4, are a description of Gajendra's episode, how Lord Hari has protected Gajendra. Now in the fifth chapter, he continues the description of fifth and sixth Manvantaras. And in the sixth Manvantara, the Lord has performed various beautiful pastimes in the Samudra Manthan, in the churning of milk ocean. Then Parikshit Maharaj asks, I want to know more about Samudra Manthan that happened in the sixth Manvantara. Then there is an elaborate description of Samudra Manthan beginning from fifth chapter, chapter 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, up to 11th chapter is description of Samudra Manthan, and 12th chapter is furthermore elaboration on that episode only. So that completes description of six Manvantaras. And in the seventh Manvantara up to 14th Manvantara are described in 13 and 14 chapters. So like that, he is giving the six categories of personalities in that 14 Manvantaras. And in the middle, according to Parikshit's enquiry, Sukadeva Goswami is elaborating on certain episodes. Now today we will focus on this Gajendra episode. So in the 31st shloka, Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami, "Sukadeva Goswami, I want to hear about Gajendra's episode in great detail." So, and he says in the 32nd shloka, "Tatkathasu mahat punyam dhanyam swastayanam shubham yatra yatrottama shloko bhagavan giyate harihi." So he says that tatkathasu mahat punyam, hearing about the pastime of the Supreme Lord Hari saving Gajendra, is very auspicious, and dhanyam, very glorious, swastyanam, very auspicious, shubham, all good. Yatra yatrottama shloko bhagavan giyate harihi, because in that beautiful episode the Supreme Lord Hari's activities are wonderfully glorified. So in this way Parikshit Maharaj has expressed his deep eagerness to know about Gajendra's episode. Now that completes the first chapter, and we will now enter the second chapter, where Sukadeva Goswami describes the beautiful episode of Gajendra. So there is a beautiful mountain called Trikuta Mountain, and in the celestial world, right, there is a beautiful mountain called Trikuta, and the height, length and breadth of this mountain is 10,000 yojanas, and it is surrounded by the ocean of milk. And this Trikuta Mountain has three principal peaks, that's why it is called Trikuta Mountain. The three principal peaks are made of iron, silver and gold. And there are other peaks also, smaller peaks. They are full of jewels, minerals and nice trees and creepers and shrubs. And there are beautiful waterfalls that are creating a very pleasant sound vibration. When waterfalls come from mountains, the small droplets, the sprinkles of water that come to us, give a very soothing effect to our skin. And the waterfall also makes a beautiful sound that creates a very soothing effect to the ears. And when we see the waterfall, that gives a beautiful experience to the eyes. So like that, when we go close to waterfall in such a scenic spot, it's very pleasant, it's very enjoyable. And when you stand on this near this Trikuta Mountain, because it is surrounded by milk ocean, that milk, the waves of that milk ocean come and touch the feet, and the ground is touched with milk, and there are emeralds that appear in different directions. And also in that mountain area, the 5th shloka says that there are beautiful caves, and in these caves demigods, the heavenly denizens, would come and enjoy. They have their pleasure and sports. And there are very pleasant sound vibrations there. Sometimes, along with pleasant sound vibrations of small birds chirping, there are lions that roar also in those mountains. And there are so many beautiful valleys that are filled with many jungle animals. And there are lakes and rivers. And the lakes are filled with crystal clear waters. And in that Trikuta Mountain region, there is a beautiful garden called Ritumath Garden. And Ritumath Garden belongs to the demigod Varuna, and it's a sporting place for several demigods, and many demigods also come there to have some pleasure pastimes there. And it has various types of flowers and fruits and lakes and birds chirping nicely and beautiful animals. And in that Ritumath Garden, there is a nice lake. So we have seen that there is a Trikuta Mountain region which is surrounded by milk ocean. In that mountain region, there is a garden called Ritumath Garden. In that garden, there is a beautiful lake. And that lake is filled with crystal clear waters. And there are beautiful lotuses that grow. And the pollen of the lotus is permeated in that atmosphere, creating a very soothing effect. And that lake is crowded with so many beautiful birds like swans and karavandas and chakravakas and cranes. And the banks of the lake are filled with beautiful flower-bearing and fruit-bearing trees. So in this beautiful mountain region, Gajendra has made his entry. Gaja means elephant, Indra means king. Gajendra means king of all elephants. So this Gajendra is a huge elephant, and he has so many wives, female elephants, and so many children, young baby elephants are there. And he has so many other friends, elephant associates. So they all came just to enjoy in these waters of this lake. So Gajendra has made his entry. Gajendra was the leader of elephants. So he is very strong. He wandered along with his female associates. That indicates how he is enjoying sex pleasure. So Gajendra is very well situated in his position as the king of elephants and king of the forest. And he has a lot of strength. As Gajendra was making his entry, he was breaking so many creepers and plants and trees, and he was crushing certain trees just to show his power. And his influence is so much that just by catching scent of Gajendra, even lower animals like jackals and other animals, they just run away. And in fact, they are surviving because Gajendra is merciful enough to spare their lives. Otherwise, Gajendra could have killed them within a moment, but Gajendra mercifully saved their lives. That's why they are surviving. And Gajendra had a lot of prestige. And he is in the company of so many other elephants, and he was always intoxicated. And the entire Trikuta mountain region appeared to tremble as Gajendra is walking with his strong and huge body. That's the influence of Gajendra. And Gajendra is completely satisfied in the association of all the female elephants and the young baby elephants and other friends who are always obedient to Gajendra, and all the other forest animals who are fearful of Gajendra. So in this way, from a material perspective, Gajendra is experiencing unobstructed enjoyment. But in a situation of unobstructed enjoyment also, there is unexpected calamity. That is the nature of this material world. The material world is a place of dukkhalayam and ashashvatam. So there is constant misery in this material world. And even if sometimes there is no misery and there is some happiness, that happiness will not last for long. It is ashashvatam. It is temporary in nature. So Gajendra, apparently Gajendra seems to be the controller of this whole Trikuta mountain region, and he is so happy. But Gajendra immediately encountered a calamity. So that will come towards the end of this chapter. So Gajendra entered, along with his family members, Gajendra entered this lake. And he picked up water. He sucked water through his trunk and started sprinkling that water on his family members, on his wives and children. And all the baby elephants and other female elephants were happily enjoying in the lake as Gajendra was sprinkling water. And Gajendra is very happy. And there is definitely a hard labor in just sucking water through its trunk and then throwing water on the other elephants repeatedly. But Gajendra never felt that it is hard labor or it is difficult. Gajendra is happily doing it. Just like a materialistic person endeavors a lot to earn a lot of money through legal or illegal means to maintain his family. Similarly, Gajendra is also endeavoring so hard in this water to satisfy his family. That's the comparison given by Sukadeva Goswami. So people who do not keep God in the center of their lives, people who do not have any spiritual inclinations, they also work so hard to enjoy in a material plane. And while working so hard to have material enjoyment or sense enjoyment, they don't realize that they are working so hard. So that impetus for sense gratification will just make them absorbed in that hard work also and not perceive any difficulty in that hard work. So Gajendra is enjoying like this. Then there is an unexpected attack. A crocodile became very angry. The crocodile was living in that lake. Crocodile is like a water animal, and Gajendra is a land animal. Gajendra entered this water and started enjoying. So crocodile became very angry, and crocodile came and caught the leg of Gajendra very tightly. So crocodile's jaws are so sharp and his teeth are very so sharp, and the crocodile just caught the leg of Gajendra, one leg of Gajendra. And Gajendra tried to release himself so much, but Gajendra could not release himself. So Gajendra was in a totally helpless state. So far it appeared that Gajendra was the controller, was the king of elephants, and nobody is a rival of Gajendra. No one can cause any harm to Gajendra. It appeared like that. So, but as soon as Gajendra entered water and doing some sports, immediately he was caught. So in this material world, apparently we may be in a comfortable situation, and we may think that I have no rival, nobody can catch me, nobody can harm me. We may think like that, but suddenly there is some calamity or some difficulty will just come and attack us, and we become completely anxious and helpless. We cannot do anything to protect ourselves. Gajendra's state is exactly like that. Gajendra fought with this crocodile for a long time. And the fighting was not for 1 hour or 2 hours or 1 day or 2 days or 10 days. That fight went for 1,000 years. So Gajendra was so strong, but all his strength could not help him to protect himself from this crocodile, because Gajendra was a land animal and crocodile was a water animal. So when Gajendra tried to release himself from this crocodile, Gajendra could not do so, because Gajendra was totally tired. So being a water animal, this crocodile was getting its food in the water, but Gajendra was not getting any food. He was only getting exhausted. So just because we are powerful in one area, that does not mean we remain powerful in every area. Gajendra is powerful on the land. If this crocodile had attacked Gajendra on the land, Gajendra could have fought with that crocodile and killed the crocodile by stamping on the crocodile, or there are many other elephant associates of Gajendra who can just kill this crocodile within few minutes only. But none of the friends of Gajendra, or the female elephants who are the wives of Gajendra, or the baby elephants, none of them could protect Gajendra from this calamity, because Gajendra was caught by this crocodile, and crocodile is very strong, and no elephant could exert its influence in the water. So the fight went for 1,000 years. So Prabhupada writes that Gajendra could not win this fight because Gajendra was in water. So Prabhupada says that Prabhupada gives a comparison between the relative positions of Gajendra and crocodile, and he says that just because a devotee cannot practice bhakti in one situation or in one ashram, that does not mean that the devotee has to give up bhakti. He can find another situation where he can comfortably practice bhakti. So while practicing bhakti, we are actually fighting with maya. Just like Gajendra is fighting with this crocodile, all the practitioners of devotional service are also declaring a war against maya, fighting with maya. In that fight with maya, sometimes the practicing devotee could be defeated. So one has to take shelter of the Lord. But in certain situations, just like Gajendra could not do anything in his fight with crocodile in the water, similarly, sometimes a sadhaka, while staying in one ashram, may not be able to perform bhakti properly. So he can definitely go to another situation, another geographical location, or another ashram, or another setup, and then try to practice devotional service. So one should not give up the fight with maya. If one is unable to fight from one place, he can go to another place and start fighting, and by taking shelter of Krishna. That's what Prabhupada says. So then, after fighting for 1,000 celestial years, Gajendra realized, none of the other elephants could protect me, and I could not protect myself. There must be some person who must be having some power to protect me. Definitely there must be supreme controller or supreme lord somewhere who is having the ability to protect me. So let me offer prayers to that person. So Gajendra did not offer any prayer to the Lord by taking a specific name of the Lord. He did not say, "Oh Ram, protect me. Oh Krishna, protect me. Oh Narasimha, protect me. Varaha, Vamana, Parashuram." He is not calling out the name of any specific form of the Lord, but he just offered prayers to that Supreme Lord, who must be having all powers in the entire cosmic manifestation, and who must be having the ability to protect Gajendra from this crocodile. So no one is there to protect me. Let me offer a prayer to the Lord. Let me take shelter of that Lord of the universe to come and protect me. So in this way, Gajendra thought, contemplated, introspected in this calamity, and came to a conclusion that I have to take shelter of some supreme person who must be having the ability to protect me. Wherever he may be, let him come and protect me. In this way, he said like this. So, that completes the second chapter of this second, eighth canto. Now we will enter the third chapter in which Gajendra's prayers are described. So Gajendra has fixed his mind and his heart on the Supreme Lord with perfect intelligence, and without taking the name of that Supreme Lord, he just offered prayers to that Lord. Actually, Gajendra was a great devotee called Indradyumna. He was a king. He was a great devotee called Indradyumna in his previous birth. In his previous birth, he has recited so many prayers and chanted so many prayers, so many mantras. And now, in this situation of calamity or predicament, Gajendra remembered that prayer that he has memorized in his previous birth. So, in this context, he offered that prayer. Prabhupada says that one has to memorize some mantras, one has to memorize some prayers, like Narasimha prayer or Brahma Samhita prayers or any other prayer in the Bhagavatam. There are so many prayers, Kunti Maharani's prayers, Bhishma's prayers, Dhruva's prayers, Pruthu's prayers, Pracheta's prayers, Lord Shiva's prayer, Rudra Gita, Gajendra's prayer here, Prahlad's prayer that we have discussed in the previous canto. Like that, there are so many beautiful prayers in our scriptures. So one can memorize some of those prayers and offer those prayers, offer those words to the Lord. And even if we, even if somebody becomes an animal or come into a very helpless situation, if one happens to remember that prayer and offers that prayer to the Lord will surely come and protect. So remembering prayers, remembering Sanskrit shlokas that are glorifying the Lord, that are seeking protection of the Lord, is very beneficial. Not only in this life, in the next life also, for several lifetimes to come also. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Neha bhikramana sosti pratyavayo na vidyate svalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. He says that even little amount of devotional service also, if it is done with sincerity, that devotional service can protect us from the greatest calamity in this life or in another life. So Gajendra has done some bhakti in his previous life, and that bhakti, that prayers that he has offered in the previous life have come to his rescue now in this life, and he's offering that same prayer. So let us discuss that prayer briefly now. So from 2nd shloka till 29th shloka, Gajendra offers these prayers. In the 2nd shloka he says, Om namo bhagavate tasmai yata etachidatmakam purushayadi bijaya pareshaya bhidhimahi. Om namo bhagavate tasmai. I offer my respectful obeisances unto that Supreme Lord, Bhagavan. Yata etat chidatmakam. Only by his prowess, this entire universe is getting animated. It's moving. Purushaya, adi bijaya. He is the supreme person and he is the origin of everything in the entire creation. Pareshaya abhidhimahi. Paresha, he is the supreme controller. Abhidhimahi, I offer my respectful obeisances, I take his shelter. So like that, Gajendra offered his first prayer, describing the Lord as the supreme origin of everything, supreme cause of everything. In the second shloka, third shloka, he says, Yasmin idam yatascedam yenedam yayidam svayam yosmat parasmatcha parah tam prapadye svayam bhuvam. He says, in this shloka, third shloka, Gajendra says that, O Lord, the entire universe rests on you. Yasmin idam yatascedam yenedam yayidam svayam. By you only this universe is created. You yourself are the universe also. Just like a pot, an earthen pot, takes the shelter of a house. And that pot comes from a potter. And the pot is made of a potter's wheel. And the pot is made of clay. So, this clay is a transformation of earth. The potter's wheel is a transformation of earth. The potter, means the potter's body, is also a transformation of earth. And the pot stays in the house is also a transformation of earth. And the pot itself is a transformation of earth. Similarly, at various stages, the universe may manifest in different ways, but ultimately the entire universe is coming from the Lord. In that sense, the universe is the Lord. So he is the supreme energy, but he is the supreme energetic who is the possessor of this energy also. So in one sense, because entire universe manifested from the Lord, you can say the Lord is the universe. But the Lord is different from the universe also. This is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Means, the Lord is the supreme energetic person. And without an energetic person, energy cannot exist. And without energy, there is no meaning for this energetic person. This energy and energetic person both are one. So in that sense, energy and energetic person means the universe and the Lord are one. Universe is the energy of the Lord. The Lord is the energetic person who is the origin of this universe. So in that sense, energy and energetic person are one, means the universe and the Lord are one. At the same time, the Lord exists separate from the universe also. This energy and energetic are different. And it's inconceivable to completely reconcile this. That's why the word Achintya is added. So Bheda Abheda Tattva. The universe is same as the Lord. That is Abheda Vakya. The universe is different from the Lord. That is Bheda Vakya. So we combine these two statements, Bheda and Abheda, and that is inconceivable. That is Achintya. Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva. So that is described here. So Gajendra described in the third shloka that the Lord is supreme energy. In the fourth shloka, he describes the Lord as supreme energetic person. Yahasvatma nidam nijamaya yarpitam kvachit vibhatam kvachitatti rohitam aviddhadruksak shubhayam tadikshate saatma mulo vatumam paratparaham. He says, Yahasvatma nidam nijamaya yarpitam. O Lord, you expand your own energy and manifest this entire cosmos. So you are the supreme energetic person who is the source of this energy. Nijamayaya arpitam. Kvachit vibhatam, kvachit tirohitam. Sometimes you manifest this universe, sometimes you may not manifest. The energetic person sometimes may exhibit his energy, sometimes he may not exhibit his energy. Thus, energy sometimes manifests, sometimes does not manifest. Means the universe sometimes is manifest, sometimes it is not manifest. But the Lord is always there. And fifth shloka continues the discussion. Describes the Lord as transcendental to this entire universal darkness. He says, Kalena panchatva mitesha krishna stom lokeshu paleshu cha sarva hetushu tamastadasid gahanam gabhiram yastasya pare bhivirajate vibhu. He says, Kalena panchatva miteshu krishnaso, by the influence of time, all the five gross elements in this universe, in fact, all the elements in the universe are destroyed. So, entire universe gets destroyed and the entire universe goes into the body of Mahavishnu and a darkness is created. But the Lord is beyond the darkness of this universal destruction. That's why He is transcendental. That's the essence of fifth shloka. So in the second, third, fourth and fifth shlokas, Gajendra described the Supreme Lord as supreme cause or origin, supreme energy, supreme energetic and transcendental. Now in the next two shlokas, shlokas number 6 and 7, Gajendra describes the Lord as a person who cannot be easily understood, and he also describes the qualifications to understand the Lord. Sixth shloka says, Nayasya deva arushayah padam vidur jantuh punah kor hati gantu miritum yathanatasya krutibhir vicheshtatum duratyayanu kramanasva mavatu. He says, Nayasya deva arushayah padam vidur. The glories of the Supreme Lord cannot be understood by great devatas, means demigods. Rishayaha, great sages also cannot understand him. Jantuhu punaha kor hati gantu miritam. I am a jantu, I am an animal. If devatas cannot understand you, if rishis cannot understand you, how can an animal like me understand you, my dear Lord? You cannot be, you are not easily understood. How? Yatha natasya kriti bhir vicheshtato. On the stage, an artist, a drama artist may be singing or may be dancing or acting. So, the people who are sitting in the audience, if they have some understanding of the science of dance or singing, then they would be able to appreciate the glories of this person's, the stage actor. Otherwise, a naive audience who has no understanding of singing or the science of dancing, they cannot appreciate the movements of this drama artist. So similarly, people who have bhakti only can appreciate the activities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. People who do not have bhakti cannot understand God. The seventh sloka says, didrikshavo yasya padam sumangalam vimukta sanga munayah susadhavaham charantyaloka vratama vrunam vane bhutatma bhuta suhurdasa megatihi. Didrikshavo yasya padam sumangalam. Didrikshavo means being very eager to see the Lord. Yasya padam sumangalam, to understand the greatness and auspicious qualities of the Supreme Lord, one should have eagerness. Such eager people can understand the Lord. And vimukta sangaha munayaha susadhavaha, such people are vimukta sangha, they are devoid of any material attachments. Munayaha, they are thoughtful sages. Susadhavaha, they perfectly follow all their rules and regulations of their sadhana. Such people can understand the Lord. These are the qualifications to see the Lord. Charanti aloka vratamavrunam vane, they travel from one place to another place in this universe by following spiritual practices and enlightening people. And bhutatma bhutaha suhurdaha samyegatihi, they are also genuine, sincere well-wishers of all living beings in this world. So such people who have all these qualifications can understand the Lord. Thus, Gajendra described in the 6th and 7th verses that who is qualified to see the Lord and who is not qualified to see the Lord. Just by being a devata or a rishi, you cannot understand the Lord. If you have bhakti, if you have proper sadhana, then you can understand the Lord. So that completes up to 7th shloka. In the 8th shloka, from 8th shloka till 12th shloka, Gajendra describes about the appearance of the Lord. You can see that small chart. So Gajendra describes about the appearance of the Lord. In the 8th and 9th shlokas, Gajendra describes the place of appearance, the external place of Lord's appearance. And 10th shloka describes how the Lord appears internally as super soul, externally as incarnations, internally as super soul. In the 11th shloka, Gajendra describes the process by which the Lord appears. In the 12th shloka, he describes various forms in which the Lord appears. Let's see the shlokas one by one. 8th shloka.
Na vidyate yasya cha janma karma va na nama rupe guna dosha eva va tathapi lokapyaya sambhavayaya svamayayata anyanukala mruchhati.
In this shloka, Gajendra says, na vidyate yasya cha janma karma va. The Lord has no material birth or material activities. Janma and karma of the Lord are divine. They are not material. Navidyate yasya cha janma karma va na nama rupe guna dosha eva va. He has no material name, nama, rupa. He has no material form. It is spiritual form. Guna, he has no material qualities. He has only spiritual qualities. Dosha eva va, he definitely has no material faults. And he says, swamaya tan yanukala mruchyati. By his own prowess, by his own maya means energy, the Lord makes his appearance in this material world in the form of several incarnations. And svamayaya tanyanukala mruchyati. Next shloka says, that is the 9th shloka.
Tasmai namaha pareshaya brahmane nanta shaktaye arupayor rupaya nama ascharya karmane. Tasmai namaha pareshaya,
I offer my respectful obeisances unto that supreme controller who is para isha. Tasmai namaha pareshaya brahmane ananta shaktaye. He is the supreme Brahman. He has unlimited energy. Ananta shaktaye. Arupaya, ururupaya. Arupa means one who has no form. Ururupaya means one who has great form. So whenever the Vedic scriptures describe that the Lord has no form, we should not take it literally thinking that the Lord has no form. He is formless. No form means no material form like us. He has a spiritual form. That's why in this one shloka, in this one line only, both things come. Arupaya, ururupaya. Arupa means he has no material form. Ururupa means he has a great spiritual form. Arupayorurupaya. Next, nama ascharya karmani. And he has karma. Karma means activities also which are very wonderful. Ascharya karmani means he does wonderful activities, not material activities. Spiritual activities he does. 10th shloka describes the internal appearance. 8th and 9th shlokas described the Lord's external appearance as incarnations. Although he is unborn, although he has no material form, material activities, still he appears in the form of various incarnations and performs so many divine activities. And 10th shloka says,
Nama Atma Pradipaya Sakshine Paramatmane Namo Giram Viduraya Manasascheta Samapi.
Nama Atma Pradipaya. The Lord is Atma Pradipa. Atma is soul. Pradipa means that which illuminates. So the Lord illuminates or enlightens the soul with spiritual knowledge. Nama Atma Pradipaya. Because he is the super soul within. So he enlightens us. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantiti. It is the Supreme Lord in the form of his super soul who gives us the necessary intelligence to perform bhakti and to come closer to the Lord. So, nama atma pradipaya sakshine paramatmani. Sakshi means he is the supreme witness. Paramatma is the super soul. Namo giram viduraya means with our words we cannot actually describe the Lord and we cannot effectively glorify the Lord. And manasas chetasamapi, even with our mind, with our consciousness also, we cannot completely understand the Lord or think of the Lord. The Lord is beyond the reach of our mind or senses or words. 11th shloka. 11th shloka describes the appearance of the Lord through bhakti yoga. Only if we practice bhakti yoga, we can have the Lord appear in our lives. 11th shloka says,
Satvena pratilabhyaya Naishkarmyena vipaschita Namaha kaivalyanathaya Nirvana sukhasam videhe Satvena pratilabhyaya.
The Lord is obtained by sattva. Here sattva is not material mode of goodness. This sattva refers to the process of bhakti yoga.
Satvena pratilabhyaya Naishkarmyena vipaschita. Naishkarmya means that kind of work that does not lead to material reactions. That work which is done with a devotional spirit as an offering to the Supreme Lord is called Naishkarmya. Naishkarmya is not simply no karma, no activity. Naishkarmya in spirit indicates the process of devotional service. It's not just inactivity, it is spiritual activity. No material activity, but spiritual activity. That's the ultimate understanding of Naishkarmya. That is ultimately bhakti yoga. So, Satvena pratilabhyaya naishkarmyena vipaschita. The Lord is obtained by the process of bhakti yoga. Namaha kaivalya nathaya. The Lord is the master of liberation. And nirvana sukhasamvide. And he is the bestower of uncontaminated pleasure or happiness. So in the 12th shloka, Gajendra describes various forms in which the Lord appears. He first described that the Lord externally appears as incarnations in the 8th and 9th shlokas. In the 10th shloka, he described that the Lord appears as super soul internally. And in the 11th shloka, he said that the Lord appears when we practice bhakti yoga. In the 12th shloka, he describes the various forms in which the Lord appears. This is all about appearance of the Lord. 12th shloka. Namaha shantaya ghoraya mudhaya gunadharmini. Nirvisheshaya samyaya namo jnana ghanaya cha. Namaha shantaya.
Shanta means the Lord sometimes appears in a very peaceful form. Example is Vasudeva. That Vasudeva form has a very peaceful countenance. He is all pervading. Namaha shantaya. Second is ghoraya. Ghora means very fierce form. That is Narasimhadev. Next, mudhaya. Mudhaya means animal. Sometimes the Lord appears in the form of an animal also, like boar, varahadeva. Then gunadharmine, and sometimes he accepts material mode, sattva, rajas, tamo gunas, and then he takes the form of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva as gunavataras. Next, nirvisheshaya. Nirvisheshaya means no qualities. But no qualities means no material qualities. And samyaya means the Lord is also, nirvisheshaya samyaya indicates Buddha avatar. So he is beyond the material varieties. Next, namo jnana ghanaya cha. And he is also condensed form of knowledge or impersonal Brahman, that is the source of knowledge. So these are various forms in which the Supreme Lord appears. So after describing the appearances of the Lord in shlokas number 8 to 12, Gajendra describes that the Supreme Lord is the supreme shelter in the next section. that spans from 13th to 17th slokas. 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. These five slokas describe that the Supreme Lord is the supreme shelter. Krishna is the supreme shelter. 13th sloka says that the Lord is the supreme father. And 14th sloka says that he is the supreme director. 15th sloka says that he is the supreme cause. 16th sloka says that he is the supreme enlightener or revealer of knowledge. And 17th sloka says that he is supremely merciful. All this put together make him the supreme shelter of everybody in the entire universe. Let us see these slokas one by one. Let's go to 13th sloka. 13th sloka says that Kshetrajnaya namastubhyam sarvadhyakshaya sakshine purushayatma moolaya moola prakritaye namaha. Kshetrajnaya namastubhyam. Kshetra means this body, this field of activities. Kshetrajna means one who knows this body. There are two types. Krishna also spoke about Kshetrajna in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Kshetrajna means knower of the body. So knower of the bodies are two. One, the jiva, soul, and second is the Supreme Lord, the super soul. Kshetrajnaya namastubhyam. Here Gajendra is offering obeisances to that supreme Kshetrajna who is the knower of all bodies. That is the super soul, Krishna. Kshetrajnaya namastubhyam. Sarva kshetreshu. Sarva adhyakshaya sakshini. He is the Sarva Adhyaksha. He is the superintendent or director or president of everything. Sarva Adhyakshaya Sakshini. Sakshi means he is the supreme witness. So the Lord stays right within our hearts as super soul and he witnesses all our activities. Not only activities, he sees all our thoughts also. So when we have good thoughts and if the people in this world do not recognize our good intentions and misunderstand us, we should not feel disgraced because the Lord as super soul is there within our hearts and he understands our good intentions. So the Lord's being the witness or sakshi or super soul should give us a sense of assurance and confidence and a shelter that the Lord never misunderstands me, although the whole world misunderstands me. But apart from this feeling, we should also get a caution note. Because sometimes we may not have good intentions. We may have bad intentions or we might have done a bad activity. And we might want to hide that bad intentions or bad activities in front of other people. So we may be successful in doing so also. But the Lord who is there within our heart will understand that we have done something bad. We have thought something bad. So now, although we can escape from people in this world, we cannot escape in the court of the Supreme Lord. So the Lord's being super soul and being the witness of all our activities and thoughts should give us confidence and caution note also. We have to be very careful. And we have to be careful not to think or do anything wrong. And we should also have confidence that the Lord will never misunderstand. So, Kshetrajnaya namastubhyam sarvadhyakshaya sakshini. Next line. Purushaya atma moolaya. Purusha means the Lord is the supreme person. He is not impersonal. Some people say the Lord is not a person. He is a light or he is energy or he is this, he is that. He doesn't exist. He has no form. He has no name. Like that some people might describe. But oftentimes it is described that the Lord is Purusha. Purusha means a person. Atma moolaya. He is the original source of all atmas, all living beings. Moola prakritaye namaha. He is the root of this prakriti also. He is the Lord of this entire material nature. He is the Lord of all living beings also. 14th sloka describes that the Lord is the supreme director. Let's recite that sloka. Sarvendriya guna drashtre sarva pratyaya hetave asatachaya yoktaya sadabhasayate namaha. Sarvendriya guna drashtre. The Lord can see the activities of all our senses, gunadrashtri, the qualities of our senses, our activities of senses are seen by the Lord. When we are seeing something good or bad, the Lord notices it. When we are hearing something good or bad, the Lord understands it. When we eat something good or bad, the Lord understands it. Sarvendriya gunadrashtri, and he will give the necessary reactions to that also, good or bad. Sarva pratyaya hetave, and he is the solution to all doubts. Or he is the revealer of all knowledge. Sarva pratyaya hetave.
asata chaya yoktaya. So this material realm is asata, it is temporary, but still it appears to be real because of the Lord's maya. And sada bhasayate namaha means it appears to be real. It is asata, but it appears to be sat. It's all because of maya. So when we desire something by the influence of maya, the Lord sanctions it because we are very adamant. At our own risk, we are desiring something material. So the Lord sanctions it and the material nature facilitates it. But if we perform bhakti and come out of this material desires, the Lord's internal energy or spiritual energy will facilitate our upliftment in consciousness and advancement in consciousness and promotion to the spiritual world also. 15th shloka describes that the Supreme Lord is the supreme cause. Very beautiful shloka. The shloka says, Namo namaste khilakaranaya nishkaranaya adbhutakaranaya sarvagamamnaya maharnavaya namo pavargaya parayanaya. Namo namaste akhilakaranaya means the Lord is the cause of all causes. Next, nishkaranaya, he himself does not have any cause. He causes everything in this world, but he himself does not have any cause. That's why he is adbhutakaranaya, his wonderful cause of everything. Namo namaste akhilakaranaya nishkaranaya adbhutakaranaya. He is the supreme cause, wonderful cause. And sarva agama amnaya maharnavaya, just like all the rivers flow towards the ocean, similarly, all the agamas or all the scriptures direct us towards the Lord through different paths. Sometimes there is karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, ashtanga yoga. Different paths are there. All these paths should ultimately culminate in the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Sarva agama amnaya maharanavaya. The Lord is like that ocean in which all the rivers of scriptures culminate. Vedaischa sarvair ahameva vedyo. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, by studying all the Vedas, I am to be known. And sarvagamamnaya maharanavaya namo apavargaya parayanaya. So the Lord is the master or the shelter of all those people who seek liberation, apavarga. Okay. Now 16th shloka is another beautiful shloka that says, gunaranichanna chidusmapaya tatkshobha visphorjita manasaya naishkarmya bhavena vivarjitagama svayam prakashaya namaskaromi. This is another intoxicating shloka that says that gunaranichanna chidusmapaya, the Lord, now there is fire in arani wood. Guna aranichanna chidusmapaya, just like fire in arani wood is covered, similarly the knowledge about the Lord is also covered because of maya. Gunaranichanna chidusmapaya tatkshobha visphorjita manasaya. The second line says that although the knowledge about the Lord is covered because of maya, the Lord's mind is indifferent to all these agitations of maya. The Lord is not covered. Our knowledge may be covered, but the Lord is not covered. But if we take shelter of the Lord, our knowledge also is not covered. By practicing bhakti yoga, we can understand the Lord. And next line says, naishkarmya bhavena vivarjitagama. Naishkarmya bhavena means in a mood of devotional service. Earlier we described that naishkarmya is actually bhakti. Naishkarmya bhavena here is basically bhakti bhavena. Vivarjita agama, when someone's devotion is so advanced and so mature, if one is so advanced in bhakti yoga, vivarjita agama, one can even transcend the rules and regulations in the scriptures also. Svayam prakashaya namaskaromi. The Lord is svayam prakasha. The Lord himself will reveal to the devotees who are dedicating themselves to the Lord through the process of bhakti yoga. Svayam prakashaya namaskaromi. So that is the 16th shloka. 17th shloka says, this is another beautiful shloka, one of the best shlokas of the entire prayers of Gajendra. 17th shloka. Madruk prapanna pashupasha vimokshanaya muktaya bhuri karunaya namolayaya స్వాంశేన సర్వతను భృన్మనసి ప్రతీత ప్రత్యగ్దృశే భగవతే బృహతే నమస్తే. మాదృక్ ప్రపన్న పశుపాశ విమోక్షణాయ. మాదృక్ మీన్స్ లైక్ మీ, ప్రపన్న మీన్స్ సరెండర్డ్ పీపుల్, పాశ విమోక్షణాయ మీన్స్ రిలీజింగ్ పీపుల్ ఫ్రమ్ బాండేజ్. వెన్ పీపుల్, వెన్ ఆల్ ఆఫ్ అస్ సరెండర్ టు ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్ కృష్ణ, లైక్ గజేంద్ర ఇస్ డూయింగ్ నౌ, ద లార్డ్ విల్ కంప్లీట్లీ రిలీజ్ అస్ ఫ్రమ్ బాండేజ్. దట్స్ ద మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ ద ఫస్ట్ లైన్. మాదృక్ ప్రపన్న పశుపాశ విమోక్షణాయ. హౌ కెన్ ద లార్డ్ రిలీజ్ అస్ ఫ్రమ్ బాండేజ్? పశుపాశ విమోక్షణాయ. హౌ కెన్ హీ డూ పాశ విమోక్షణ? బికాస్ హీ హింసెల్ఫ్ ఇస్ నాట్ బౌండ్. పాశ విమోక్షణాయ ముక్తాయ. ద కీవర్డ్ హియర్ ఇస్ ముక్తాయ, బికాస్ ద లార్డ్ హింసెల్ఫ్ ఇస్ లిబరేటెడ్. హీ ఈస్ నెవర్ బౌండ్ బై ఎనీ మెటీరియల్ లాస్. హీ కెన్ లిబరేట్ అస్. సో ముక్తాయ, సో జస్ట్ మీన్ దట్ మీన్స్ హీ హ్యాస్ ద కెపాసిటీ టు డెలివర్ అస్. హీ హ్యాస్ ద నెససరీ కెపాసిటీ అండ్ అండ్ ఎనర్జీ టు లిబరేట్ అస్. ముక్తాయ, జస్ట్ having capacity to deliver us is not sufficient. One should also have the compassion to deliver us. So the next word says bhuri karunaya. Muktaya is number one. Number two is bhuri karunaya, means the Lord is supremely compassionate. So one has ability to deliver us, that is not sufficient. He should also have compassion to deliver us. And for example, somebody has 50,000 rupees and I need some 20,000 rupees. And if he, that means he has the ability to help me with my 20,000. So that is muktaya. But having ability is not sufficient. He should have some kindness also, that I am in some need and he should help me. So bhuri karunaya. So having capacity and kindness also is not sufficient. He should be aware that I am in need. That's why the next word says alayaya. Alayaya means the Lord is completely attentive to the needs of his devotees. Muktaya bhuri karunaya namo alayaya. So the Lord is having the capacity to deliver us, he has the compassion to deliver us, and thirdly, he is aware that we are in some difficulty. So how is he aware? Swamshena sarvata nubhran manasi pratita pratyagdrishe bhagavate brihate namaste. By his own amsha, as a super soul, he stays right within the hearts of all the conditioned souls. Thus he understands our difficulties. Thus he can deliver us. So in this way, Gajendra describes the Lord as the supreme deliverer. Then the 18th shloka says that there are so many obstacles in worshipping the Lord. The obstacles are Atmatma japta griha vitta janeshu sakta తేర్ దుష్ప్రాపణాయ గుణ సంగ వివర్జితాయ ముక్తాత్మభిస్వ హృదయే పరిభావితాయ జ్ఞానాత్మనే భగవతే నమ ఈశ్వరాయ. ఆత్మాత్మ జాప్త గ్రహవిత్త జనేషు సక్తైర్. ఆత్మ మీన్స్ వన్స్ బాడీ, ఆత్మజ మీన్స్ దోస్ ఆర్ బోర్న్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ బాడీ, దట్ ఈస్ ఆల్ ది చిల్డ్రన్. ఆప్త, సో మెనీ రిలేటివ్స్. Graha means house, vitta, money, jana, relatives. Saktair means one who is attached to all this household paraphernalia. Atmatma japta graha vitta janeshu saktair dushprapanaya guna sanga vivarjitaya. So the second line says that it is very extremely difficult to attain the Lord if one is not devoid of this influence of material modes. Muktatma bhisva hridaye paribhavitaya. But the Lord can easily be attainable by muktatmas, those people who are completely liberated and they are not attached. So the 19th shloka says that the Lord is sometimes worshipped by some people with motivations. There are so many motivations in them. So they need some deliverance, or they need some spiritual body, or they want to go to heavenly planets, like that, with some motivations they perform worship. That is not the best form of worship, but still, because they approached the Lord will protect them also. But the Lord is more kind and affectionate to those people who are worshipping him without any motivations, unmotivated worship. So that unmotivated worship,
is described in the 20th shloka. 19th shloka describes sakama bhaktas who worship the Lord with motivations. 20th shloka describes unmotivated worship, means nishkama bhaktas.
Ekantino yasya na kanchanartham vanchanti evai bhagavat prapannaha atyadbhutam tacharitam sumangalam gayanta ananda samudra magnaha ekantino yasya na kanchanartham.
Such nishkama bhaktas, they are ekantinas, they have one pointed devotion unto the Supreme Lord Krishna. Na kanchanartham vanchanti, they don't desire anything material. Bhagavat prapannaha, they are completely surrendered unto the Lord. And atyadbhutam tacharitam sumangalam, they are constantly singing the glories, the wonderful narrations of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Atyadbhutam means very wonderful. Charitam, the narration of the Lord. Sumangalam, very auspicious. Gayanti, they sing. Ananda samudra magnaha, they immerse in an ocean of ananda or happiness by singing the glories of the Lord. That's the nature of these devotees. And next shloka says that the Lord is the supreme source of everything.
Tamaksharam brahma paramparesham avyaktamadhyatmika yoga gamyam atindriyam sukshmamivati duram anantamadhyam paripurnamide.
So this shloka describes the Supreme Lord's attributes. Aksharam, the Lord is eternally existing. And Brahma Paramparesham, he is the Supreme Brahman, he is Param, he is transcendental. Paresham, the Supreme Controller. Avyaktam, unmanifest or invisible. Adhyatma Yoga Gamyam, he is available only by Bhakti Yoga. Like that, several attributes of the Lord are described. 22nd shloka describes that the Lord is the Supreme Creator. 23rd shloka describes that he is the Supreme Source and Refuge and shelter of all beings. And later, 24th and 25th shlokas describe that the Lord is not a demigod. He is not a animal. He is not a human being. He is not a bird. He is not a beast. He is not a man. He is not a woman. So he is transcendental to all these external designations. He is the last word in the discrimination of neti, neti, not this, not this. So, after glorifying the attributes of the Lord in various ways, Gajendra says that, O Lord, I have been asking you to liberate me from this crocodile, but even after you deliver me from this crocodile, I don't wish to live in this animal body anymore. So, as devotees offer prayers to the Lord in the midst of some difficulty, the devotees not only pray to the Lord to relieve them from the difficulty, their ultimate prayer is to release them from this whole material world and entire material bondage itself. So there are no more difficulties. So prayer is offered to relieve a person from the temporary difficulty, but the prayer is also offered ultimately to release from this entire material attachment and material bondage only. This Gajendra is praying to the Lord to release him from this ignorance. So ignorance causes material existence. So in this way, Gajendra offers several prayers. In the 26th shloka, Gajendra says that the Lord is the master of universe. And finally, Gajendra says that the jiva's ignorance is because of maya. Please take me out of this entanglement of ignorance. When Gajendra offered this prayer like this, these prayers invoke Lord Hari. Gajendra did not call specifically, "Oh Hari, please come and protect me, Krishna, Rama, Narasimha, Varaha, Parashuram." He did not call anyone. He just offered prayers to that Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Controller. And the Supreme Lord Hari appeared on the back of Garuda. He was so eager to protect Gajendra. All the demigods thought that all the demigods were also witnessing that Gajendra is being tormented by this crocodile. But demigods also had the ability to protect Gajendra. But demigods did not come because they were offended. They were thinking that Gajendra did not call us. He is only calling the Supreme Lord. although we have the ability to protect him, he's going and taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Why should we go and protect? And that Supreme Lord Hari is not so easy to respond. He will not come and the animal will die. The demigods were thinking like this. So that itself is an offense. But the Lord did not neglect Gajendra. Although the Lord was not thinking that Gajendra did not take my name. Why should I go and protect him? He was not thinking like that. The Lord very eagerly came on the back of Garuda in great haste. He came there and he released his Sudarshan Chakra to kill the crocodile. As the Supreme Lord is coming on the back of Garuda holding his Sudarshan Chakra, Gajendra saw him, saw this beautiful darshan of the Lord. He was in a blue complexion. He's like a blue sapphire on a golden mountain like bird, that is Garuda. And Gajendra immediately picked up a lotus flower from that lake and offered it to the Lord and received and welcomed the Lord with great eagerness. So the Lord immediately released his Sudarshan Chakra and cut the head of the crocodile and pulled out Gajendra from that water and protected and saved Gajendra. So that completes the third chapter and we enter the fourth chapter. And because the demigods were offended, because Gajendra did not call the demigods, all the demigods saw that the Supreme Lord Vishnu, Krishna, Hari is coming to protect Gajendra, they realized their mistake. Oh, we should not have thought like this. So all the demigods also came along with the Lord. So the Lord came, Garuda came, and all the demigods also came offering prayers. Please forgive us. We thought that you will never come to protect Gajendra. And we thought that Gajendra did not glorify us. We felt a little offended. That itself is an offense. We are sorry. So they came to offer prayers to the Lord. And Gajendra was delivered by the Lord. And the crocodile was also delivered. This crocodile was actually a Gandharva named Huhu in his past life. So he was cursed by Devalamuni. And now the Supreme Lord Hari released him from that curse. And this crocodile just left. And also Gajendra attained Sarupya Mukti. Gajendra, by the touch of Lord Hari, was released from this material bondage and he attained a form similar to the Lord, as you see in that picture. And in the past life, Gajendra was King Indradyumna. He was the great Vaishnava king of the Pandya Desha. And he retired after ruling the kingdom for a while. He retired from the responsibilities of a king and he entered forest. He made a small cottage and he performed a devotional service. He had matted locks. And he was Jatadhara. And he was doing so much of tapasya. And he was observing so many vows like Maunavrata. And he was completely absorbed in meditation and ecstasy in love of Godhead. So at that time, as Indradyumna was meditating on the Lord, once Agastya Rishi came there along with his disciples. But Indradyumna was absorbed in meditation. And Agastya Rishi thought that Indradyumna has become so dull or what? He did not come to receive me. He did not receive a guest who has come to his cottage. So Agastya Rishi was offended. He thought that he is very dull and dumb like an elephant. And Agastya Rishi cursed Indradyumna Maharaj to become an elephant. Although Indradyumna Maharaj was cursed like this, Indradyumna did not defend himself. Or he did not offend Durvasa Muni. Agastya Rishi. Not Durvasa. So he accepted this curse with gratitude. He was thinking that, oh, whatever happens in my life is only because of the Supreme Lord's will. And it could be a result of my own past deeds. So let me not become perturbed or disturbed by this. Let me accept this curse. And that Agastya and that Indradyumna Maharaj became Gajendra. So this is the past life of Gajendra. And after protecting Gajendra, Lord Hari gives a Phalashruti to this whole episode. So when one hears this Gajendra's episode, one can be promoted to higher planets, one can get reputation as great devotees, and one can be relieved from the contamination of Kali Yuga, and one can counteract all bad elements. So whoever chants this Gajendra's episode after getting up from the bed in the morning, they can be relieved from the bad dreams also. So like that, the Lord gives so many blessings. And finally, he says, whoever offers the prayers offered by Lord Gajendra, so they will get an eternal residence in the spiritual world at the end of their lives. So in this way, the Supreme Lord Vishnu has personally blessed Gajendra. So we completed the episode of Gajendra that happened in the fourth Manvantara. And we will continue our description of the fifth Manvantara in the fifth chapter in the next episode. Thank you all very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.